Hi, good afternoon, folks. Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com, July 2nd, 2009. This is a conference call for the community. We are recording it. If you don't wish to be recorded, please get off the phone. Keep your identity confidential. This is an open call. We have had some technical error. There was a problem. It looked like I've been talking for the last 20-25 minutes and the call was not getting recorded. So a lot of people hung up and called Monica in the office. Well, I'm going to try to keep going from the point where I was at. I'll go back and re-record what I had talked about earlier if Monica doesn't have a recording for it. So I've told her to check if something was recorded. I'm almost more than half done. I'm coming to IMQ-7, H-1 stamping and TD visa. She wants to come into USA on TD visa and transfer to H-1 later on. You can do that, but you cannot have TD and H-1 at the same time. Okay? You can have one or the other, but you cannot have both at the same time. So you can enter on TD, wait. When the time is ripe for you to start your H-1 work, you can go back and get an H-1 visa stamping, or you can apply for a change of status from TD to H-1. Okay? Jenny, I'm going to have to rush through most of these things because we wasted a lot of time with this technical problem, not being able to hear me. But, I think I've covered what you wanted to know. Peepuli says no green card yet. Priority date is February 11, 2002. Sister has applied for her green card. I-140 was approved. Priority date is 2002. Case is at Texas Service Center. They don't know why the case is taking so long. Pallavi, what you should do is contact your congressman's office. Have them follow this through. There is no reason for them to be sitting on this case for so long. Okay? Next question, Fitness 901. Now, this is a complicated case in which somebody came to the United States, got married, and then did not follow through with the green card because the husband pulled out of the green card. She was put in deportation. She took voluntary departure and left. Now she has one DV. Couple of things. This is beyond my expertise. I don't do DV cases because most of them don't need a lawyer, and I don't do deportation. What you should do is you should contact the lawyer who did the deportation. Make sure he has no disqualification. Normally, when somebody is given voluntary departure, they don't incur any disqualification. She should be able to come back for her DV, okay, as far as I know. Chances look good to me if there was no other disqualification. Go ahead and contact the lawyer who did the deportation. Shahab03 wants to know, I have a bachelor's degree and 5 years of experience, and I'm currently working on TN1. As a computer systems analyst. Do I qualify for EB2? Yes, you do. If you have a 4-year bachelor's degree and 5 years of progressively responsible post-bachelor's experience. Okay. And your country of citizenship does not matter for EB2. It's the country of birth. So if you are a Canadian citizen, that does not automatically give you a faster processing. It's the country of birth. Okay. How long does the EB2 process roughly take? Look at the visa bulletin on our website. You can look at it, just type visa bulletin and it will come up in the search engine. Okay. Next question, Shrikant Reddy, US. I have 485 initial interviews soon, but I just wanted to clarify about my recent H-1B extension. There was a typo on the LCA. State name was incorrect. City name is correct. This can be a problem. I think you should use your EAD and switch back to H-1B after the LCA correction and the H-1B amendment. You're going to have to do the whole thing all over again. But you should be on EAD because otherwise it's unauthorized employment. Okay? So that would be the way to go in my view. Next question is Akib. Do I qualify for automatic visa revalidation? The issue here is this. If somebody enters USA on advanced parole, and then they change employers, go to another employer, can they go out and using, for example, to Canada for a week and come back using automatic visa revalidation? I think there has never been a clear pronouncement of the answer to this question. I would be very hesitant to say it's okay. Use your advanced parole. That would be the right thing to do. Do not use AVR because I don't think we can guarantee that AVR is automatically available. if you look at the AVR regulations, they give you a very general sense that they expect a continuity in your status. Okay? But parole is not really status, even though you are considered to be on H-1 under Cronin Memorandum, which is still good law, but it still puts me in doubt. You can do one more thing, although I won't trust it. You can try contacting cbp.gov, Customs and Border Protection. They can usually give you good answers, and their customer service is usually pretty good. But I would not trust that answer. I would still want you to travel on advance parole. Okay? Anusai wants to know, travel while valid F2 and H1B are pending. I am on F1 currently on OPT. Wife is here. Applied for H1. Status of H1 is being pending. Can she travel in July with F2 and return back in August with F2? She can, because your H1 only kicks in October, right? Even if the H1B is approved, till October she is still on F2 status. And if she's got the visa, she can come back. The only problem is, in order for her to get H4 then, she has to go get H4 stamping before October, or she has to go apply for a change of status back to H4 when she comes. So when she comes back in August on F2, she'll have to apply for H4. Okay? And that's not a big deal, actually. Next question, non-IMI kids fate from Naveen. Entire family is on AOS. Kids are 17 plus and 16. They are joining Indian schools. If their AP expires by end of March, what are the consequences? Well, the consequences are they would lose their 485, which means you can, keeping in mind that they must not turn 21, you know, discuss the consequences with your lawyer about doing that. But you could let their 485 lapse and convert them to consular processing. Or you can convert yourself to H1 and them to H4. As long as their H4 visa is valid, they can stay outside USA. Or you can make sure their advance parole is always active. These are the three choices. Consular processing, keep advance parole active, keep H1, H4 active. Next question is Naveen. I'm sorry. The first question was non-immigrant fate. Next question is Naveen. Re-entering USA on A2 visa while 485 is pending. The question is this. 485 was pending. I left USA, came back on A2 visa. Is my 485 still valid? Sir, I don't know the answer to this question. I would have to look up the law. Generally speaking, the only exceptions to travel are H and L visa, as far as I know. A2 could be. I don't know the law off the top of my head. I would have to look at the regulations. So have your own lawyers look it up. There's no need for you to have outside counsel look it up and pay for it. So just have your lawyers look it up. That should be easy enough for them. The last question for today was Singh for us. She had a question about what to do about a very long fact pattern. I was able to talk with her before we even got started with this conference. So she knows the answer. I'm not going to record the answer. Now, I'm probably going to go back and start from the questions that I've already answered from the very beginning. Okay? Unfortunately, we ended up wasting a lot of time in this, but I have no choice. I'm going to start all over again. First question was Medicine Man. I'm finishing residency, starting a new job. I told him he wanted to know, he doesn't want to stay with this employer for a long time. Should he apply for a green card anyway? And the answer is yes, you should. Because when you apply for a green card and get your I-140 approval, you can carry your priority date with you wherever you go. That's a very big advantage. Everybody should apply for their green card as quickly as possible. Even if you want to change employers, you can carry the priority date with you. Next question. Trust 208, husband's green card was approved. My 485 is still pending. What are they waiting for? I told you to, you haven't heard that recording, of course, but my suggestion was to go through your congressman's office or through your lawyer's ALA contact and see what was going on with your case. Next question was when to apply for citizenship. I had also answered this question. The way citizenship rules work is this. It's complicated. I have to go back and look at the rules every time, and I hope what I'm telling you is the right thing. I think it is. The way it works is, starting back from the date you apply for citizenship, you must fulfill two conditions. Number one, you must have had a green card for 5 years, and you must have physically lived in the United States for 2.5 years. In addition, you must not have been outside USA for more than 1 year. Okay. Now, your wife was outside USA for more than 1 year. Her 5 years begin again from the date she comes back. So from the date she comes back after that 1 year trip, she has to accumulate 5 years and 2.5 years presence in the United States. None of the visits outside can be more than 1 year. If they are more than 6 months but less than 1 year, you have to explain them. If they are less than 6 months, no problem. One more comment. If somebody has a re-entry permit, they don't have to do 5 years, they have to do 4 years and 1 day. Okay? So when she comes back after the 1 year trip, she can start counting 4 years and 1 day. And if she stays in USA, she should be able to apply 4 years and 1 day from the date she last returned after her long absence from the United States. Okay? Trust to eight, I had asked you one person. I would like only one question per person if that's possible. This is the same user asking me a second question. My brother is in green card, he's a green card holder. Why, and he's going to get his citizenship. Wife is currently in India. See, the problem is you can't stay unmarried when she's just when she's married. And he can't stay unmarried when he's married. That's lying. That can become a permanent bar from entering USA. So when he applies for his citizenship, he must tell INS that he's married. And if she has ever made a misrepresentation to INS, you might need some kind of a waiver for her to get her green card because she has made a misrepresentation. And you must get that waiver. Okay? Usually the waivers are not that complicated. I mean, they're time-consuming. But, you know, you should be able to get a waiver. So, yes, tell the truth, please. Rani One wants to know, INS has withdrawn the I-140 because of an error. What should I do? Well, when INS makes an error, do the following four things. There is a number to which you can fax a request for reconsideration because of the error. Okay? Your lawyer should have that fax number. Number two, file a motion to reopen. I know it's $500-$600 out of your pocket, but do it. Okay? Number three, contact your congressman or contact the ALA people. Okay? And number four, also contact the INS customer service, the phone number, and see what they say. Do all of these things together. Next question is Kunal Girotra. He wants to know, I have a J-1 waiver pending. State Department says they are waiting to hear from the sponsor. What should I do? Please contact the sponsor. Ask them to respond in a hurry. I don't think you should have a problem for you getting a waiver because IIE typically should not object to it. But in any case, I think it's better to contact them. Next question. Spouse of green card holder. Planning to marry a girl who's on L1 visa. I'm a green card holder. Well, she can't stay here. Spouse of a green card holder cannot stay here. Spouse of a citizen can because they filed 485 right away. For your spouse, 485 is probably 5-6 years away. She can't stay while she's waiting for 485 filing. F1 is going to be difficult because F1 requires her to disclose if she has a fiancé or a husband in the United States. Okay? So, visa is going to be difficult. She can try for F1 change of status. All of this is up in the air. Difficult to say how it will work out. F1s are very, very difficult to predict. Her best bet is H1 or L1. Next question, Sai for green card. He had a very complicated fact pattern. And apparently, he says he consulted with me last year and he wanted my input again. His fact pattern is, with company A, his labor was approved, I-140 was approved, 485 was pending, then I-140 was denied. When I-140 is denied, 485 is considered to be automatically gone. There are several views on this, but in my view, it's gone. So don't consider, even if it says status is pending or transfer to Texas, don't think it's pending, unless you win the appeal. If you win the appeal, the 485 will be reinstated. As of today, you don't have a 485. Now, the second question has, the second employer has also filed, Company B has also filed a green card. I-140 was approved. But when they applied for an H-1, the H-1 was denied saying, oh, your 485 was denied. Well, of course, it's a mistake because you have two I-140s. INS is considering only the I-140 that was denied. But by the way, even based upon that I-140, since it is an appeal, you are entitled to an H-1 extension. Not 3 years, but 1 year. So in any case, you are entitled to 3 years, And refiling the H-1 is a good idea. That's what I suggested. That's what you did. So, good. We'll see what happens with that. Now, your client also wants to file H-1, H-4. They can. I don't see any problem with that. Okay. So, make sure that you provide an explanation to USCIS if you file a new H-1, H-4 about, you know, all this story of yours where the I-140/45 has been denied. And that's not the same thing as the I-140 that was filed subsequently. If you clarify that, I think you should be fine. Next question is from Alpana, 132. She's going to be on F-1 status for 8 months. Can she get OPT? Well, as I recall, the regulations say 9 academic months. Usually that means 2 full semesters. Your International Students Office can only give you the best answer for this. I don't know how they interpret this. They are the experts. Actually, I call them if I have an issue like this. Okay. But in your case, one good news is, since you had an H-1 from before, another employer, you are not subject to the quota, even though you never joined them. That's the good news. So you can convert to H-1 if you don't get OPT. Just go to H-1. And you're not subject to the quota. Next question is PR holder. He wants to know how pre-adjudication works. Well, the way it is, it used to work is this. When INS has time, instead of waiting for priority dates to become current, they start adjudicating the 45 cases right away instead of just shelving them. If they find that everything is in order, they'll say the case has been pre-approved and just waiting for visa number. So hopefully when the visa numbers become current, you get your green card without any further inquiries. That's the way it's supposed to work. But the bad side is that they can also deny cases when they're not clearly approvable. Okay. So that's pre-adjudication. Next question is Manu, VNS, traveling to India on advanced parole. His wife and daughter are traveling. He wants to know if there's something special. Well, there's nothing special. Just need advanced parole and passport. But if there are any special problems like they were out of status or unlawfully present, you must discuss that with your lawyers. If it's a normal case, you have absolutely no problem. Next question is from Pinto Beans, and one thing about her case was that was not clear. I'm not sure if I had gotten this far the second time around. Just give me a second, folks. I forgot how far ahead was I. Well, I'm not sure how many questions I have already answered. I'll keep going and try to summarize everything so that folks who have posted messages have an answer. Sridatta Pinto Bean says, I'm an employment-based AOS. I lost my H-1. I am on maternity leave. I have not been working. My lawyer told me I can work anywhere on EAD, even non-IT jobs. Well, yes and no. If you have an EAD, you can work anywhere, no question about that. But if you are the primary applicant and you are working on non-IT jobs, if INS questions you, they can raise issues whether you have a permanent job with that employer. Then you would have to do AC-21. Okay? So my point is, if you are the secondary or the derivative beneficiary, no problem, do whatever you want. But if you are the primary, you may want to get together with your lawyer and discuss that in more detail. Okay? So yeah, you can do any kind of job if you are a secondary or a derivative beneficiary. Mr. Patel wants to know, no more silence, job change using AC-21. He wants to know, I am in EB-3, can I transfer to EB-2 using AC-21? No. What you can do is, you can use AC-21, but when you use AC-21, you have to have a similar job. That means you'll stay in EB-3. If you want to go to EB-2, you can change using AC-21 and then reapply for a green card to the new employer for a different job. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're going to go to an employer as a developer. You have a labor search for a developer. The new job is also a developer. You use AC-21 and go over. Now have your employer, if they have a job open for you which requires EB-2 qualifications, for example, team leader or project manager, they can start a second green card for you at the I-140 stage, They can transfer your priority date from the old case to the new case. Now you have an EB2 I-140 with the old priority date. They can now take this I-140, knock off the old I-140 on top of the 485 that's already pending. So from a developer, you went to being a team leader with an EB2 classification with the old priority date. I hope I'm making myself clear. So basically, AC21 is only for similar jobs, but you can transfer the priority date, which does require filing a new green card. Okay? Daughter is 19. Will she lose her H4 after attaining 21? Yes, she will. Now, this question, I'm not sure, again, you know, I'm a little confused about how many questions I've answered already, because I had to go back and start all over again. So, but let me keep going anyway. Tammy underscore int. H-1B transfer denial. They were working for company X on H-1. Company Y applied for H-1 transfer. They joined company Y. Company Y's H-1 got denied. Now what do we do? The old company has withdrawn the H-1. Nothing has been heard from INS, but it's withdrawn. You are out of status. What you should do is leave the United States. Let X or Y apply for your H-1 all over again. Once it gets approved, you come back. Okay? The reason for the denial was that the company Y is not an employer. What that usually means is that they were not able to provide sufficient documentation showing that they are the actual employer, not the employee. This can be overcome. So have them reapply for the H-1. Zach has it, job loss after 485 filing and 180 days complete. Is there any grace period to find a job when somebody gets laid off and they are qualified for AC21? There is unlimited grace period. As long as INS doesn't question you, that's what they have said, unless we send you an RFE, in which case you'll have 4 to 6 or 8 weeks to respond with a job letter, you can be sitting at home watching TV all day for all these years. So this is basically an RFE based process. Okay? But do find a job and apply for an AC21 as soon as you can. Now folks, we have only 10 minutes left. I think I've covered all the questions. I'm pretty sure I have, even in doing them in two rounds. If I have missed anybody's questions, let me just open the call for those folks. So if I have missed anybody's question, please let me know. Just 1 second. Let me go back to the conference. Press star 6 to talk with me, star 6. If I have not answered your question, please let me know.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello, sir.
Did you answer question number 22?
Can you remind me what that question is about, sir?
This is on automatic visa revalidation.
Yes, I did, but I'll answer it again for you. I think it's dangerous to travel when you have traveled on advanced parole relying upon AVR. The regulations appear to be pointing in the direction that you've got to have continuous status. And advanced parole is not status. It's parole. Okay? Now, I may be wrong, and, CBP might take a different view of it. I have also advised you to call CBP.
Okay.
Go to cbp.gov, ask them what they say. I would be very careful. I would rather have you travel on advanced parole.
Okay.
As simple as that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck, sir. Anybody else whose question I have missed, folks? Fortunately or unfortunately, I know everybody's questions off the top of my head now because I've read them twice already. So anybody who has any question following up on the question that I have answered, press star 6.
Hey, Rajiv, quick question on the last one that you answered about layoff and sitting at home. Can the person also travel to India and come back while he doesn't have a job?
I'm a little concerned because with ICE, or actually CBP, you never know what kind of questions they're going to ask you.
Okay.
If they ask you a question, you have a job, and we want to confirm you have a job, that could become a problem. Technically or legally, that should not be an issue. As a practical matter, it could become one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else, folks? Any questions that I haven't answered, or any questions on follow-up questions? Any questions whatsoever? Star 6.
Hey, Radhi, this is Gagan here.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Actually, my question is, I was on L1B status till February 2009,
okay.
And my L1B extension got denied for some documentation reason. And then my company sent me back to India and they filed L1A for me.
Okay.
And now I was requesting my company to file 140 in EB1 category.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
So do you think, like as such, I'm a consultant, but in L1A visa application,
well,
I
don't quite know how they got you an L1A if you are just a consultant, because L1A is supposed to be for managerial or executive level employees.
I mean, I'm a consultant plus I'm a manager as well.
That's okay. As long as you're on a managing assignment, you can get an L1A and then an EB1 based upon that. No problem.
Okay, so let me put it this way. Like, instead of I'll say manager, I have a very limited scope for hiring or firing a person within the project limitation. That's it. So I'm not on a very high level, but in the project hierarchy, I have those kind of rights. So do you think if I go with the 140 application in EB1 category, will that be a nice thing, or should I go with an EB2 itself?
I think you should try an EB1 first. I really think an EB1 first, because I don't know your case. I mean, right now I'm struggling with what the facts are. But you know, if INS would decide if they gave you an L1A, they should give you an EB1. It's the same criteria.
Okay. Because my company right now they are I requested them, so they are filing both the things, 140 in EB1 as well as in EB2.
That's even better. If they are doing also a labor certification for you, very good. That's the best thing possible.
I mean, my labor is already approved, so EB2, 140, they have already filed, and now they are filing 140 in EB1.
What they could do is they could do the EB2, 140 premium, and EB1, if not, I don't think it's EB1 premium yet, so you can just do EB1 regular.
Okay, so there's no harm in filing two 140s, one in EB1 and one in EB2, correct?
I prefer to do it not simultaneously, but one after another, but I think it should be okay as long as both jobs are open.
Okay, the reason is like my labor was about to expire next month, so that's why they said let's file EB2 and then immediately after a week or so we'll file EB2, EB1.
I think they should do an EB2 premium processing wait and then file an EB1.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. Yeah. Folks, anybody has any questions? Very good. It looks like we are done, even having to do everything all over again. So thank you for your patience, and I'm very sorry to those folks who logged in and then couldn't hear anything and had to hang up. And good luck, folks. Thanks for being here. Bye-bye.